great to be in love. Anyone know the feeling? Kind of feel like the earth gets a little surreal. In this particular presentation, what we're going to be doing is talking about love. And specifically, we're going to be talking about how we sometimes get in love not with the person, but we get in love with love. And that can kind of take us to some wrong places if we start chasing that love bug. So I certainly appreciate each of you being here. We're going to be on a fairly close schedule, so a lot of material we want to cover this morning. When I first started looking at this material, I was asked by a congregation to come in to address issues that they had several folks in there that were boy crazy and girl crazy, according to how they had appraised it. And this lesson kind of developed out of that certainly as we go through mate selection, that we kind of fall in love, we fall out of love, and we have those periods of time that we're just like lovesick in between. But what I want to look at in this lesson is what God has to say on this subject. And what I'm also aware is that at a critical time of our life, in our youth, usually, that we begin to form relationships that are largely going to determine where we go with the rest of our lives. I want to start this lesson, before we get to the PowerPoints, by emphasizing a challenge, or by giving a challenge to you that I've given to a lot of people. And that is, look at what your mission in life is. What is it that you're intending to do with your life? And set forth a mission statement. A company that wants to be successful has a mission statement. The Lord has a mission statement for His church. It has three parts: evangelism, edification, and limited benevolence. And so everything falls within the scope of those three pieces of the mission. But my question is for us, wherever we are in life, what is your mission? What are you trying to accomplish? And how are you going to know when you get there? So I would encourage you to begin to formulate that. When people form a home, then I would also ask the same question when I do family counseling. Why are you all married? And usually people who've come to me for some problem, and I ask them why they're married, they just kind of look at me kind of with a blank look on their face like the deer in the headlight, and have a little trouble answering that. And if I get an answer, usually it's something nebulous like, well, we're in love, or we were in love, so we got married. Sometimes I'll get, well, we were dating and we kind of ran out of things to do, so if the relationship was going to go any further, we just needed to get married. Like, well, all right, is that the basis to form the rest of your life? So I would encourage you to take a look at what is your personal mission in life. What are you trying to accomplish? That may look somewhat like not particularly goals, but what is the big picture of where you want to be in life? What are you trying to accomplish? I would hope one of the first things would be in your mission would be that you want to serve God with all your heart, soul, and mind. But be thinking about that and form a mission statement. I can talk to you more about that. I've got several presentations on how to go about doing that. But I would encourage that. I'm going to be kind of cranking my neck back around, getting my exercise this morning. Let me just step over here. In mental health circles, we talk about people who, or we talk with people about being male dependent and female dependent. And when we're talking with them, what we mean is that some people don't have enough time between relationships to do any healing. And so they just go into serial relationships, one after another, and the cumulative effect of some of the things that people need to be able to heal, it doesn't take place. So they end up with a lot of unfinished business. This quote up here, or statement, is an example of that. Like many people in an addictive relationship, this woman thought that her relationship started out real well. In fact, it is too well. She met the man of her dreams. And in this particular case, it was romantic. It was a whirlwind relationship where they wanted to be together every minute of the day. Declarations of love were made early and easily. And less than 2 weeks into the relationship, they were committing themselves that they were in love with one another. A month later, it started to fall apart. He started criticizing the way she dressed, her laugh, her being too needy, her being fat. He needed space. And at that point, she panicked and started chasing after him. Without him, she felt that her whole world would fall apart. Okay, now that's kind of a negative connotation, but this kind of sets the stage for what I'm talking about today, is how sometimes we can get into relationships that are toxic to our Christianity as well as to our own personal life. And this lesson is really about kind of how to avoid some of those toxic relationships. In courtship and dating, in our culture, in our culture, we have dating and mate selection and all that kind of stuff, but that's not always been the case. As a matter of fact, in a number of places in the world, we have moms and dads who kind of plan who you're going to marry. So we have arranged marriages out there. Someone said they didn't know if that was such a bad idea, but the ones that end up getting strapped with another mate here may question that. But for instance, in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 14, a passage there talks about the older women are to teach the younger women to love their husbands. I looked at that and it's like, well, why would you be married to somebody you didn't love? And perhaps that has a reference to some of the arranged marriages that took place during the culture of the New Testament. The idea here is that we can grow to love someone once in a relationship. But that's not particularly our topic this morning. That simply says that not all cultures have the same style. As a matter of fact, as we have moved from the culture of the farm back in the early part of the 1900s, and we've moved into towns and we've become more mobile with our transportation and more isolated with where we can go and what we can do, then courtship and dating have taken on some different connotations. But I want to suggest Mary and Joseph. We get a nice glimpse into what the culture of the New Testament was. Here's a young lady, Mary, and she's betrothed to Joseph. Now, that betrothal process, they were committed to one another. Fact is, the text talks about to get rid of her, you have to give her a bill of divorcement. But that engagement period was considered to be like a pretty much of a legal thing, that it would have to be separated through a legal action. And what we learn about Mary and Joseph there is that marriages from the New Testament era were such that that premarital status was a time for people to get to know each other. And I'm just a pretty firm believer that if we're going to spend the rest of our life with someone, that it's going to be pretty important that we understand who that person is and what their values are, what are the important things in life to them. It has to be more than whether we like the same kind of music or whether we can laugh at each other's jokes, because life is much more serious than that. So we need to start looking at what are the things that we really consider. And what I suggest in this slide is that people are going to tend to marry someone they've dated. We all agree with that. All right. So in this country, in the process of mate selection, we need to watch where we go, who we go with, as we're in crowds and so forth, and watch what pond we fish in. If we were going to catch carp, we would go where the carp are. If we're going to catch some other kind of fish that is a good edible fish, we're going to have to go where those fish are. So here's what I'm suggesting in this particular slide, is where we go and what we do will be the process by which we ultimately meet people that are going to be heading the same way we're heading, and by which ultimately we select and narrow down to some. If we're going to spend our time as we go into mate selection, and we're going to spend our time out with the partying people, out with those that drink and drug and don't have the moral standards that we as Christians would have, if we spend our time there, then the chances are pretty strong that we will make our mate selection from that group of people that we're hanging out with. And so that's why 1 Corinthians 15:33 talks about evil companions corrupt good morals. Many people tried to disprove that. God has always proved it to be right, that evil companions will tend to pull us down more than us pulling them up. So we want to hang out with the right kind of people in the right places, doing the right kinds of things, so that first is because it's the right thing and the right influences, but next because we want to make our selections in life from those good people. I'm just really impressed with this congregation. You have an extremely unique opportunity here as people kind of come and go, and you got a lot of young people that are appear to be heading the same direction, and that's quite a blessing. Where I preach on Sundays, I leave Indianapolis and I drive 2.5 hours each Sunday, and I go to Plymouth, Indiana, which is a little town of about 10,000, and there we only have one teenager in the whole congregation. Actually, we have two. She has a sister. But those two young ladies are struggling with where do I find quality guys? And we try to help them with that and help with opportunities to be with other young people in the area. But we're pretty isolated up there. You've got an opportunity here. And I'm not saying this is a pond, but you have a lot of options here that folks in other places don't have. Have we been thankful for that? Thanking God that we can be surrounded by folks that are heading the same direction that we are. So we may not need to look too far here in this place. Relationship addiction can be called the hidden addiction. And that is that in our minds, with songs and with the teachings of our culture, just the subtle things, sometimes we can leave the impression that you're not really important if nobody wants to be with you. You're no one till someone loves you was an old love song. And the idea there is that people need to pair up and that you've got to have somebody by your side in order to be a whole person. And so the idea of relationship addictions comes in here. And sometimes what this means is that we begin to look outside of ourselves to fix something inside of ourselves. And we'll talk a little bit more about that and how we need to come to the dating culture in such a way that we are not trying to be in the repair service. We talked about addiction and what addiction is. It's obsessive compulsive behavior. It's ritualistic behavior, over and over and over doing the same things. One of the definitions, a working definition of insanity, is to do the same thing over and over and expect different results. Sometimes in the dating relationship, people pick the same kind of person over and over and over and expect to have a different result. The importance of this is that we are picking someone that once we have made that selection and we have said our I do's, then we're pretty much locked into that for the rest of our lives. So we want to be very careful. It's a time for wisdom. It's a time to enjoy life. It's a time not to get too bogged down in things. But it's a time of that needs great wisdom as we go through this process. And by the way, not every date needs to be, am I going to marry this one or not? But we may want to ask that question, is this the kind of person that if this goes anywhere that I would be interested in spending the rest of my life with? And we may just kind of keep that in mind. If the answer that's no, then we need to keep that very casual, or else we need to cut it off and move on to someone else that maybe is more in line. So obsessive compulsive behavior. This usually starts and is usually triggered by a certain kind of person. And what I mean by that is we tend to pick people to date who match in some way some piece of our lives. For instance, a person from an alcoholic family or a drug addicted family, a family that would be more of a dysfunctional family, that often what those in those families try to find when they pick a person to date is they try to replicate something that kind of fills in the gap. For instance, a an enabling person or a codependent person may need to find the alcoholic or addict in order for them to be complete. Why? Because the codependent person is going to need someone to fix. And if they don't have anybody to fix, they don't feel complete. But the issue there with those individuals is that what they need to do, instead of work on fixing someone else, they need to work on fixing themselves. As why do I look outside of myself trying to go around fixing everybody else when I'm really the main one that's broken here? So looking to ourselves, being able to present ourselves as a proper person and as a whole person. And if you've ever thought, this relationship is sick, so someone's been out here dating and they're thinking, this relationship is sick, this relationship is not good for me, but I can't keep myself from going back. I just can't stay away from them. If you've ever thought like that, then you may want to examine whether you might be in one of these cycles of relationship addiction or male or female dependency. Sometimes people are more in love than they are with a person. In other words, they're chasing the feeling. This is where the addiction piece comes in. When we are chasing the peptides, the endorphins, and the adrenaline that come with this being in love, that euphoric, pleasure-centered thing that takes place in the brain, and people sometimes are more in love with that feeling than they are with the actual person. So I ask the question, what is love? And it's a very nebulous term. There are five different Greek words for love, and don't know that we'll define all that here, but what I find people, when I say, define love for me, when you say that you're in love, what does that mean to you? And often what I will hear is people say, well, he needs me or she needs me. And, you know, I'm just afraid if I weren't with them that their life would just fall apart. They depend on me so much. That's not about love. That's not a definition of love. As a matter of fact, sometimes I find people defining pity more than they do love. And that their definition of love is one of pity, that I feel sorry for them, they need to be fixed. Oh, they tell me that if I break up with them, that their whole world will fall apart. Or in some sicker cases, a person will say, well, I know that they've told me if I break up with them that they're going to go hurt themselves, so that's why I stay with them. That's a toxic relationship. And that's something that a person may need a little help to get out of and need help for the other person as well, so that the threats of suicide or threats of hurting ourselves, if you break up, that's intimidation, and that's not what love's about. But that does happen. While I'm on that, let me say this, that there are some danger signs while a person's in the dating years. In our culture today, some precursors to domestic violence are when we have violence in the dating relationship, where a guy will be abusive or a woman will be abusive to the one they're dating. And by that, I mean physically abusive, as in slapping each other or in shoving each other. And that goes on frequently. Usually is followed by a makeup period, and so people don't talk about it a lot. But physical violence, emotional abuse, and extreme jealousy goes on in some of these relationships. And when those things start festering during the dating years, those are warning signs that this relationship is not going to go anywhere good. And here's why I say that, is because where it starts is just the start, but it will progressively grow worse and worse and worse. We find that in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 13. Evil men and seducers will wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. So the nature of sin is where it starts is not where it stops, but it will start at a certain place and then it will progressively move forward. So if you're in an abusive relationship where someone's name-calling, someone's putting you down, they're acting like you're stupid, like you have no sense, they're trying to intimidate you and treating you hostile or withholding emotions in order to get you to do something for them, then that's a toxic relationship. And unfortunately, sometimes we're not ready for those relationships as they happen. Now, what are we going to do about that? Obviously, what we need to do is to face the issue. Don't run from the issue. Facing the issue may mean that person don't want to go out with us anymore. But they may, in fact, do us a favor. If that's the way they want to be, and they want to be angry about that, then maybe they've done us a favor by not going out with us. Now, of course, the issue with that is now we have to sit home and kind of have to get over some of our love sickness, and that's the aftermath of that. Well, be careful that you're defining when you say I'm in love with someone. Be sure that we're not in pity with them, feeling sorry for them, or feeling like we need to go out and fix them. Dating is not a repair school. It is a relationship that ideally would be in there as equals. Love addicts often confuse these two definitions, and so fall into a cycle of one rescue and the other, and that's about a disproportionate amount of who has the power in the relationship. And that power is very important, because whoever has the power has the control in the relationship. And here's how they can get toxic, into a chaos triangle. And what I want to look at in this is this actually is the triangle that we use with domestic violence, but it can apply in dating as well when there is abuse that is going on. So we have three different roles people play in this. And you need all three of them. Here's a victim, a victimizer, and a rescuer. And what that means is that here is someone who basically is abusing someone else, either emotionally or physically or some other way, even financially, or cutting off all the resources where you're mine, and I'll block you even with your friends. I'll isolate you. That's what a victimizer does. Is they carve someone out just for them. They may even carve them out from their moms and dads and drive wedges there, because in that relationship, they want that person to be exclusively theirs. That's a very dangerous situation. And if that progresses to a point of marriage, then that's the setup for domestic violence. That's total control. And that's not a healthy thing. It's certainly not a healthy sign. But a victim, a person who's a victimizer, is going to select someone that he or she feels like that they will become their victim. In other words, I am going to control you, and in this relationship, I'm going to control you. You're going to do what I say. We're going to go where we go, and so forth. And I'm going to make all those calls. So this is a person who is very dominant, and the victim often is a person who is more passive. And so you can see how those two might get together in a dating relationship. And then in comes the rescuer. Now, the rescuer can be anybody. It can be mom, dad. It can be someone's peers. It can be anybody. But the rescuer comes in, and then here's what happens. If the rescuer is Chuck over here, and so he's somebody here is dating, and there's an issue, and they say, Brother Chuck, we got a problem here. And Brother Chuck comes in, he says, talks to the victim, says, you know, it may not be too healthy for you to stay in that relationship. Then guess what's likely to happen to Brother Chuck? He becomes the bad guy, because this thing shifts. And so what happens is that the victim becomes the victimizer. We're going to pick on you. You told me to break up with my boyfriend and girlfriend. And so now Chuck becomes the victim, and the victimizer is the person who was initially the victim, and then the rescuer may be the other guy out here who actually was the victimizer. And so see how the roles shift? And what happens is the victimizer now steps in, and he's going to rescue this person from Chuck, who has become the victimizer. Does that make any sense? I don't know if I said that real clearly, but see how these roles shift. And this is the triangulation that gets into very unhealthy relationships, and people who try to help often become the bad guy, and so forth. So when this happens, then we need to get out of that cycle. need to get out. Yeah, need to get out of the cycle. The way we get out of the cycle is the cycle has to break at some point. And that is that the relationship is really between the two people. And someone's going to have to call stop or woe to this, that it's not okay for this to be going on. And when we do that, we know that we're taking the risk or making the risk that the relationship may break up. That is not always bad, but it is usually painful. Someone made the statement, there is no growth without pain. And sometimes we have to go through the pain of a breakup in a dating relationship to realize, you know, we can get ourselves in way too deep with people that are not healthy for us. Okay? All right. Essentials of a positive relationship. So how do we avoid that kind of a deal where we get kind of caught in the trap? And the first thing I want to suggest is in Matthew 23:39. There it tells us that we need to have something to offer. And what we would offer when we're in a dating situation, the question of who am I comes in. So what do I have to offer? If I have nothing to offer to the relationship, then the relationship is going to be totally one-sided, that the other person is I'm viewing them as they offer everything, and I don't have anything really to offer. So what do I bring to the relationship? What do I bring to this? And the passage here in Matthew 22:39 talks about one thing, and that is my attitude toward myself. Jesus says that there's two things on which the law hangs. One is to love God with all your whole heart, soul, and might, and that would be a thing that we would bring to the relationship, that God is primary. And we bring that wherever we go, whatever we're doing, that's primary, that's principle. Second is that we love our neighbor or have goodwill toward our neighbor, and then this love our neighbor, that little phrase, as myself. So in that passage, there is a thing of self-love. If we have not accepted ourselves as a person, then we need to back off before we get too involved with other people and to do a little work on ourselves. Spend some time getting to develop ourselves and that phrase of loving your neighbor as yourself gets to identifying who am I. Some people are not ready to date. Some people are not ready for a relationship. And for them to get into a relationship prematurely can be kind of devastating and floundering. And I would separate relationship as opposed to friendship or just kind of casual hanging out with other young people. But getting into a relationship means I need something to offer. So what do I bring to the table? And what does the other person bring to the table? If we are going to be talking about relationship beyond something just very casual. So who am I? What am I trying to accomplish? And without this, without me having a definition of God comes first, I have a general goodwill toward all, and I love myself. Without those primary things, there is no anchor in the relationship. So if I don't love myself, then we may be in a situation where we are set up to be exploited by the person we're with. So if I've got this low self-image and I don't think I'm worthy and the other person's doing me a favor to go out with me, then I may end up being a follower and getting involved in things that that would not be godly for me to be involved in. Now, without this also, there can be a situation of idolatry. Did you ever hear the phrase, oh, he just idolizes her? Is that a good phrase? Idolatry. You know, we can make an idol out of money, but when we look at some of these passages, we see that the person who loves father or mother, son or daughter, more than me is not worthy of me, Jesus says. And what he's telling us here is that the primary love that we have in our life is not for human relationships, even as close as moms, dads, sons, and daughters. But the primary goal we should have is to love God with all of our heart, soul, and mind. When our and the person we are dating, when the person that we are in partnership with or relationship with, when they become more important to us than God, then we have made an idol in our hearts. And that can happen. That can happen very easily. Here's how it happens. We make the choice between putting our Christianity first at service times or going to a game with who we're dating. That's how that starts to happen. We're making choices. It also happens when we start compromising on our values, our Christian values. Maybe start letting the gate down on our morals, even to a small extent. Then when those things start happening, we may be beginning to build an idol and make an idol out of this person that we are with. We've got to be careful not to do that. So with little or nothing to offer, the person often becomes a beggar for the other person to love me. Just love me, love me, love me. What do you bring to the table? I'm so afraid you'll leave me. And that can put the Christian in an extremely difficult position and can make an idol out of the partner. Let me say this. The partner who is being idolized, and that may be any of us here, but the partner who is being idolized also has a responsibility. You remember how Paul and Barnabas were about to worship them as Jupiter and who was the other one? Mercurius or something, whatever. But you remember that. And what Paul says is, don't worship us, you need to worship God. And if we're in a relationship where someone that we are with has made an idol out of us, we need to call their attention to that. Because if we are looking for a person that has the matching value of God is first and a general love for mankind and love for themselves, and we see that their relationship to God is not the primary thing, we may need to call their hand to that on that. Because that shifts the values that may have attracted us. So let's not make an idol out of the person that we're dating to where we will compromise our values and do things that would be against God's word in order to keep this mate or to be in this relationship. Courtship and marriage relationships need to come second to all other relationships. I've already said that. And we are told to flee idolatry. We just covered that. Now, sometimes people come out of difficult situations in their home. If a person's from a dysfunctional home or they're trying to flee a bad home life, and it can be any number of things that maybe were not healthy in the home, and people try to flee that, then what they may find themselves doing is running from kind of the frying pan, jumping in the fire. So here's a person that had an abusive relationship at home, however that was, and they're marrying or they're looking for someone to connect with so that they can get on with their life and get out of that home life. Someone who is fleeing a difficult situation needs to deal with what was in that difficult situation. Because if they're carrying baggage with them into the relationship, that baggage is not going to go away. We call that unfinished business in my field. And unfinished business simply means there's some things you need to work on to get some closure to some stuff that's in your past that's really not about me. And you need to do that so that we have a presentable situation as we move forward with this relationship. Knights in shining armor often come out with tarnished armor when we realize that this is not the hero. This is not my handsome prince that is coming to rescue me from the tower, as the fairy tales may tell us. We realize that each person coming to the relationship not only will have their strengths, but they will also have their weaknesses, and those that unfortunately, when we're dating, we want the person to see the best side of us. But I recommend that we date at least long enough to where they see the other side of us too. One of the recommendations I make is that before you think about getting married, you need to have a good fuss and see how y'all handle each other when that's going on. Because I'll guarantee you'll have more than one as you get going. So just everything's hunky-dory, everything's peachy And if that's the only side they've seen, they need to see the other side of us too. And so don't be too hasty to jump into a marriage relationship. All right. Sometimes people get that fix-it thing. If I just loved them more, and that would be a codependent kind of thing, that it's about me, that they're broken, and if I just did more, if I loved them more, and that's an unequal relationship in dating. Back before I got cancer, I used to be a runner. And one of the things I did each morning is I'd go out and run 5 miles. And I was pretty faithful like clockwork with that. And there was this three-legged dog. I don't know how that dog lost his leg. But whatever happened, that was the meanest thing. And I would know when I would get to a certain spot. That dog also knew when I get to a certain spot. And that dog would tear out after me. What I got to noticing is that I usually enjoyed my run until I got to about that spot. And then, ultimately, I would anticipate. And so I would carry a switch or a water gun with me to squirt him and so forth, and something to deter this dog. That dog was the biggest irritant to me. But I would run on down the road a little ways, and there would be a pack of dogs. And these dogs would run along with me. And actually, that was kind of fun to have some partners in that run. I kind of looked forward to getting there. Now, what I want to ask is, in relationship, are we the friendly dog that runs along with the person, or are we the three-legged dog that just aggravates the fire out of somebody? We need to ask, how do we relate? Do I just, when we are in disagreement, do we jump in there and just irritate each other and just keep nagging at each other? How do we relate? And my suggestion here is that we run along together in this relationship. What will happen is when we have an unequal relationship over time, then the relationship will be taken for granted. When someone is begging the other one, please love me, love me, love me, love me, I'll do whatever you want, please love me. When that happens, then that person can realize very much, I've got the relationship, I don't have to work on it too much, I've got this. And often what will happen is the challenge of the relationship is gone. And they will begin looking for other challenges out there somewhere. That's how relationships can get torn asunder by bringing somebody else in. And that's also how people begin feeling, this relationship has me feeling stuck. I'm trapped in this relationship. It's not meeting my needs. Let's move forward. What we would look for is a relationship that inspires us to be the best person that we can be, where we feel safe enough that we can actually be vulnerable with the other person, let our guard down, and to talk about the deeper things about what's really important to us, what our values are. We need to take an honest look at what kind of values that we have. And there's several things here. I'm not going to go into all these. But you can read those and maybe note that. We need to have shared values. Not just do we like the same music, do we like going to the same places, but we have shared values. And what that would mean, as we talked about a moment ago, is values regarding God. Financial security would be another one of those. As we're dating and as we're in this process of finally selecting who's going to be our mate for life, then we need to ask questions of what is it that's important to them. Finances are one of the biggest barriers or biggest problems that people have in marriage. He likes to save and she likes to spend, or vice versa. And that can be a problem. Oh, wow, saw some smiles there. But that can be a problem. And yeah, those things need to be discussed. Because in dating, a lot of times, the facade that is there is, oh, I'll buy you anything and everything. Let me shower you with these gifts. But that may not be what the person really thinks about finances. person may want to may be a little different. So you need to talk about that, about those things, and even who our friends are, and what role our friends going to have in our relationship. Do you know that most affairs that happen in married life, most affairs, and cheating also in dating life, that most of those happen with a close friend of one or the other. They do. And that's because we end up almost in a group date with a commitment to each other. So what do we do for fun? What do we call fun? And does that fun mean that we're separate when we have fun? Do we have fun together? What is it that we do? Other things, what is the me time? What do I need to do as a human? And how do I need to spend some time that is my refreshing time apart from whoever I'm with? And what do they need to do? And then what do we need to do together? Sometimes people get very jealous of each other's time. Those things need to be discussed during the dating relationship. And we talked about the values here. We've already mentioned those several times. But what I would recommend is that when we are in the process of mate selection, then very often what happens is that the kissing and the cuddling and sexual innuendos, wherever that takes the person, those can become a prominent thing in the relationship to where these things don't get discussed. And when that happens, then we enter a relationship that is built primarily upon the physical, when we may or may not know that person or what they value, what they respect, what they honor. And then that first year is a rock and roll year, for sure, if you haven't talked about those things. Even if you have talked about those, adjusting to one another can be a difficult time. Okay. I also want to know what kind of traits a person has. Are they greedy? Is this person stingy? Do they not want to be around your family? Role models. We find Jonadab gave Amnon some pretty bad advice there about his sister. Be careful who you get your advice from. So when you need advice in your relationship, where do you get it from? Who's going to talk with you about that? Let me. There's much more in this, and I'm leaving these PowerPoints for you to go through. There's several lists here that I would recommend that you look at your leisure. All right, that's a little test. I'm going to stop this because it's time to stop. But here's what I want to suggest, is when we are in a dating relationship and we finally decide we're going to marry that person, then we are locked in. When we say I do, we're locked in for the rest of our lives. And it is much better not to bring the dysfunction into the relationship than it is to bring that dysfunction into the relationship and have to work a lifetime or a big part of a lifetime trying to address it later on. The Bible says very clearly in the book of Malachi, God says, I hate putting away. And something else that I believe that he hates even more, and that is a cheating mate. And sometimes what people will do is they'll begin to look for a way out. In the marriage counseling that I do with individuals, two things I note with members of the church, and these are almost diabolical. One is, in order to get out of the marriage, three things. To get out of the marriage, I've got to force the other one out. So we'll sabotage the marriage. The other one would be that in order to get out of the marriage, one of us is going to have to cheat on the other. And so I'm going to try to set that up to where that other person does it, where the church won't view me as the bad guy. So I'll try to set them up. And I'm talking about what members of the church tell me when they want out. The other one would be praying that your partner dies. And yes, that does happen too. I just wish he'd die. Wish he'd die. And when people come and talk with me about those kind of things, you know, you're locked in. And here's what we should do in marriage. We should not be looking for a way out of marriage. But we should be looking for a way to stay in our relationship and to make it work and make it healthy. That's what God wants us to do. There's a lot more to say. There's PowerPoints. I'll leave those for you to read in your own leisure. Thank you very much.